Welcome to Unlapped, Katie George, alongside Nate Saunders and Lawrence Edmondson. And this is not just an ordinary episode of Unlapped. We have a very special guest this week. The two of you just saw him. Are you excited to speak with him again?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if we're naming him at this point. This is one of the best characters in the paddock. It's Christian Horner. And he is, I would say, one of the most interesting people, just generally in Formula One, one of the most powerful people in Formula One. And yeah, is, you know, love him or hate him, and you know, I know he divides a lot of people's opinions, he's an absolutely sensational person to interview when he's, you know, especially when he feels, you know, like he's got something to talk about. So yeah, really, really excited about it.
Lawrence, has looking... Nate ever heard of a big reveal?
No, he's not into that. No,
sorry.
This is why he's such a good journalist. He just breaks all the embargoes and
yeah, I don't listen to embargoes, Casey. I don't. I'm just going to break it myself. You know,
not like we're not going to have him on the thumbnail and in the title. Everyone already knows.
Yeah,
Nate is our very own Helmut Marko. He just says it like it is. He doesn't mince his words.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's something to that. Maybe being a bit more like Helmut Marko isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not. I think there's some pros to that. All right, let's cut to the chase. Let's get right to it. We'd like to introduce a very special guest, as you now know, Red Bull team principal Christian Horner, who just witnessed his team's 13th consecutive Grand Prix win as we head into summer break. Christian, we're, of course, thrilled to have you. How are you fresh off your 1-2 finish in Belgium?
Yeah, all good. The last race before the summer shutdown, so it's the last few days in the factory, and then I think a well-earned two-week break for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. Two things have become common occurrences for your team this season: breaking records and lately breaking trophies. Yeah. What on earth is going on there, and how do you solve this moving forward?
Well, technically, Budapest wasn't our fault. You know, Lando Norris broke that beautiful piece of porcelain trophy that took about 6 months to make. So we now have a collection of bits in our trophy cabinet. And then unfortunately, a repeat with some damage to the constructors trophy at the weekend, but Lando Norris wasn't involved in that one. So, but that one can be repaired.
Does a bill get sent to McLaren there, Christian, for that? Or do you guys just you gonna leave
absolutely.
It as it is?
Yeah, absolutely. They get the bill for that one. So we'll see. I mean, it's a beautiful trophy. I mean, it's a great piece of porcelain. And unfortunately, we allow all the staff members to have their picture taken with the trophy after a race win. And you know, it's not a great picture with some bits of porcelain.
I feel like Lando should have to spend his 2 week break gluing it all back together.
Yes, he should be. You have that challenge.
And Christian, I mean, you've collected so many of them this season, you know, and that's been really the story of the year, records breaking, trophies and stuff. But just going back to February, did you have any idea at that point of how good the season was going to be? You were clearly confident coming into the season, but for it to have been like this must be just so surprising for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could have never even imagined in your wildest dreams to think that we're heading into the summer break unbeaten in both Grand Prix and sprint races. I mean, in February, we knew we had a good car, but we expected Ferrari to build on last year. We expected Mercedes to, you know, to be there also. And so, it completely took us by surprise just how competitive we were compared to our opponents.
Christian, was there a moment in testing where you and Adrian and maybe Helmut all looked at each other and you thought, wow, we've got a kind of McLaren 1988 situation on our hands where we can go and dominate this season?
I don't think any of us thought that the car we had was actually as potent as that. We could see from the race runs that we looked competitive. The Aston looked like it was the closest to us. And the Mercedes didn't look in great shape. They'd pioneered on with their concept. So we could only really tell our own performance. And of course, having been at Bahrain the previous year and lost out with a reliability issue, we were determined to put that right, you know, this year.
Everyone on the outside, I feel like, is just so focused on the perfect season. You get asked that question every single weekend. Can you win every weekend? Can you win every single race from here on out? How do you personally stay focused and keep your team focused on just the here and now?
I think that's where you got to be. You got to be in the here and now, and every session, every qualifying, every race, just take one at a time. And that's been our approach, and that's been our, you know, mantra so far this year, and that's what we'll do after the summer break. There's so many things and variables that can go wrong. It's just that focusing on the things that you can control, reacting to the conditions, making sure that we're reliable and as competitive as we can possibly be with the car.
I imagine it's not hard for your drivers and personnel to buy into that based on their personalities, but do you have any pushback on that, or do everybody's similarly focused in that same way?
Everybody's focused. Everybody knows what their job is. Everybody, you know, roles and responsibilities are clearly defined. So that makes life a lot, you know, more straightforward. And, you know, Max has just been incredible this year. I mean, he's stepped it up another gear. You know, Checo had a great, great start to the year in Jeddah and Azerbaijan. But Max has been truly impressive.
Christian, just to focus on the team, and obviously there's all this hard work that goes on behind the scenes in the factory. We don't usually get to see it at a Grand Prix weekend. When Mercedes were winning, they always talked about their culture, no blame, all this kind of stuff. How would you define the Red Bull culture? What is this secret to success?
I think the secret to success is exactly that. It is, you know, the culture that flows throughout the business, very much a can-do attitude. And you know, everybody loves winning. And so we celebrate every success. We obviously had some difficult years where we were trying to get back into a winning position, but nobody lost focus of what the target was, what the goal was, and what the ambition, you know, was. So, I've never seen motivation higher, you know, on the campus than we currently have. And, you know, winning is fun and we celebrate every single victory.
Yeah, Christian, you mentioned those difficult years, and it was such a long time that Mercedes was on top. How much sweeter does it feel that, you know, you've had that weight, you've established yourself now as the top team, but also, I guess, in a way, sticking it to Toto, sticking it to Mercedes a little bit, like, after how good they were to be the team that replaced them, that must just add such a nice feeling to the overall accomplishment as well.
Yeah, I mean, 7 long years is a long time. I mean, you get less for, you know, crimes. We had to wait to get back into a competitive position, and you know, we had to do a lot of watching of a lot of Mercedes winning and so on, and it, you know, but we never lost sight of our target. We were still winning races pretty much every single year. We still won races and at circuits that we could you know, excel at. So we never lost that target. It was just about putting the missing pieces into place, and then once we got a competitive power unit, bang, you know, we were able to go toe to toe with Mercedes. So they were lucky they had it easy all of those years when we were running one-legged.
Yeah, now you're not, that's for certain. It's one thing, Christian, to have a generational driver, a strong driver lineup. It's another to just make the right call, seemingly time and time again, strategy-wise, to click on all cylinders in the pit lane. There just seems to be no weakness to exploit when you look at your team. Is this the most complete team that you've been a part of since your time at Red Bull?
Yeah, absolutely. And it means every single area is doing their job. It's pit stops, it's strategy, it's reliability, it's aerodynamics, it's mechanical design, it's the upgrades, it's, you know, everybody through all the 22 different departments that we have is delivering at a level where, you know, they're outperforming their opponents. And that's what you have to do to win in this sport. And I think that, you know, when you see the one thing that everybody has in common is the car and the performance of that car on a Sunday afternoon, and what it means to everybody to see that car cross the line first, you know, has huge value to us.
I don't want to dwell too much on those 7 long years, as you called them, but it was clear that there was a huge amount of things that your team was good at, but you were being hamstrung usually by the engine, occasionally by other things. So how important were those years in terms of basically getting to a position where you can make a brilliant chassis, make it drivable, and then these new regulations come along and it's a blank sheet of paper for everyone? So how important were all those lessons from that 7 years to getting to this position you're in now?
Well, they were hugely important because they galvanized the team, because we came off a winning streak and then suddenly we had no chance. We were turning up at races and we had no chance of success. And I think that tested you know, the team in many respects. It'd been very easy for a lot of people to have left at that point. But we stuck together and we, you know, we focused on the things that we could, you know, influence. And I think that the way the team reacted, it hardened the team. in many respects during that period. And the races we had, we won, we had to scrap hard for, we had to be super, super sharp because, you know, we were running with a handicap effectively. And if you look at the races that we won, and in those years, there were many of them were opportunistic wins or wins where at circuits where power didn't play a pivotal focus. So, and I think that just made us match fit for when, I mean, 2021 was the most epic season, I think, probably in the history of the sport. But, you know, we were ready for that challenge. We were battle hardened, you know, from those intervening years.
Christian, on 2021, I think you're right. I think most fans would agree it's kind of the best season that we've ever seen. From the outside, a lot of fans might say, oh, well, Red Bull this season, you know, it's a lot easier for them. They don't have that challenge. But I imagine internally, it doesn't feel like that. I imagine there's a different intensity to a 2021, but there's also a you know, an equally intense kind of feeling in 23. How do those kind of seasons compare, and how do they differ? And how does that add to kind of the challenge of staying ahead in those moments?
We're only about 19 months on from 2021, and it's amazing how things change. Because 21, we were the challenger. You know, we were going up the, you know, we were the David, Mercedes were the Goliath. They'd steamrolled the previous 7 years, you know, in the sport. And so, you know, we were the challenger. We had nothing to lose. We were throwing everything at it, and we were on the ascendancy, and we pulled it off. 22, 23, suddenly, you know, we produced a great car, and we started, you know, winning and serial winning. And then, you know, at that point you become, you have a very much a target, and people are trying to take your staff or your sponsors or trying to cause issues, you know, elsewhere with, you know, with whatever politics they can play. And yeah, you know, it's a lonely place when you're at the top. I think that the way that the team has responded has just been fantastic. And, you know, the results that we've been achieving, you know, in 22 were insane. The fact that we might even be able to match that or even beat that in 23 is beyond crazy.
Do you have a preference, being the hunted or the hunter?
I sleep better at the moment than I did in 2021. I mean, I'd far rather have 250 points in the pocket than you know, than two.
Well, yeah, I mean, that year was just unbelievable. I mean, it must have been every night you were kind of going to bed, just, you know, the stress levels, watching it, you know, from the media center, they were high. I can't imagine what it was like being involved in that, you know, so closely.
It was the most intense, insane period because there was so much going on track, off track. I didn't have a single gray hair before 2021. It aged me. It was the most intense, insanely intense year that you could ever imagine. It was like a heavyweight fight from the first race in Bahrain to you know, that final round in Abu Dhabi.
We still see now that there's a little bit of needle between Red Bull and Mercedes. Do you think that will ever go? Have you and Toto kind of made up a little bit from where you were in 2021?
I haven't seen much of him, you know, recently. So, look, of course, this competition, there's needle, but there's also a respect. Mm-hmm. You know, that's important. But, you know, look, they're a great team. They're a big team. They've achieved, you know, a record-breaking team in so many areas that, you know, we don't underestimate them, that they'll be back at some point for sure. And yeah, I'm sure then Toto will have plenty to say.
And just finally on that, because I think we'll talk about Max a little bit in a sec, but just on that fight behind you, what's your read on it been? Because all year that's been chopping and changing, but the gap from that group to you hasn't ever seemed to, at least from, you know, from our vantage point, have changed so much. So which of those teams have you looked at and thought, you know, those guys are really going to give us a headache down the line? Or are you actually kind of fascinated by the fact that there is this really close group of teams there chasing you, and as soon as that gap comes down, I guess it starts to put you under quite a bit of pressure because it's just kind of guys coming at you from all different directions?
Well, every week it keeps changing. And You know, one week it's Ferrari, next week it's Mercedes, and McLaren have turned up, and Aston Martin were there at the beginning of the year. So every time we look over our shoulder, it's somebody else that's there. And that, many respects, has helped us, of course. But yeah, it's insanely close. And you could, you know, with stability in the rules, there will always be convergence. If you want close racing, just leave the rules alone, and you will always find the teams. You know, they will converge, the cars will converge. And so I totally expect next year to be a whole different kettle of fish to this year.
You mentioned Aston at the beginning of the season, that was one of the main storylines, just what progress they were able to make in the off season. But when you look at McLaren from a disappointing start to where they've been the last few weeks, how impressive of a turnaround is that to be able to do that mid season in such a quick amount of time?
Yeah, it's very impressive, you know, to go from nowhere to suddenly being, you know, pushing us hard for pole positions. You know, very impressive to have that kind of change, because there's no silver bullets in Formula One. And so to introduce an upgrade that does that, you know, was they obviously made their car come alive, and suddenly it started, you know, behaving in a way that perhaps it was intended to.
Christian, do you think, we've seen a number of teams kind of take inspiration from you. Do you think we are going to get this convergence going into next year, where we have a lot of Red Bull style clones, or is there enough scope in these regulations to still have wildly different looking cars?
Well, you can see the DNA of our cars sort of sprinkling around the field now. And of course, there will be convergence. You can't look at a car like what we've produced and think that, well, everybody's going to go a different path next year. I mean, if you look at the suspension layout on the McLaren, some of the principles on some of the other cars, you see the influences that you know, RB18 and 19 have had, and one could only imagine that's only going to converge, you know, more in 2024.
I think one of the things this season, Christian, has been, I mean, everything's been impressive, but I think every weekend we're kind of blown away on our side just about Max, and just wherever he seems to start, whatever happens to him in a race, he just seems as unbeatable as a driver I think we've seen for a long, long time. Managing him from your role, I mean, how impressive has it been? And just, do you still get blown away by some of his performances? Because it seems like every week he finds something new to kind of bring out.
Well, look, he's operating at an insanely high level, and with the benefit of experience now, I mean, he's always had raw speed and great natural talent, but the capacity he has in the car to be following the race, to be thinking about aspects that way beyond you know, the normal sphere, is hugely, hugely impressive. And I think that you know, he's just taken another step again this year. I mean, the last couple of years he's been out of this world, and I think, you know, you've got to start to consider Max now as one of the all-time greats. I mean, it's and particularly at 25 years of age, what he's done in the space of time he's done it, you know, he's just massively, massively impressive. And I think it's a privilege to work with him and see, you know, this driver that's just going to achieve these unbelievable things. And some of the things he does that just take us by surprise on a continual basis, whether it's in mixed conditions, wet conditions, dry conditions, you know, his ability to extract the maximum from the car is unparalleled.
It must be interesting to look at his data compared to Checo and see where those differences are. Is it possible to pick that apart and find out where it is? Because we know Checo has been a very good driver, very competitive against a bunch of names, you know, through his time in F1. So what is it that Max has? Is it possible to define it, what he has over his teammates?
I think he's just got this feel for the car, for the limit of grip. He's got such a confidence in himself and his own ability, that his ability to get there so quickly. You look at his laps, so the first time you turn up at a Grand Prix or a new circuit, or, you know, his lap at times will just, his first lap of a day will often be 2-3 seconds quicker than anybody else. And, you know, you see a little bit of rain at Spa at the weekend, boom, suddenly that gap goes like that. He has tremendous natural feel, and the ability to understand what the car needs from his input to get the most out of it. And that's it's fascinating to see, because you know, he just adapts so quickly to a situation or a condition with a car.
What do you think it would be like to be his teammate, to race alongside him?
It would be tough. I mean, that's probably the toughest job in Formula One, is to be Max Verstappen's teammate, because the level that he's operating at, I don't think there's a driver in Formula One that you know, will be able to take him on in this car. And I think that you know, that's a tough gig for, you know, for anybody. You've got to be mentally very, very resilient to, you know, to deal and cope with that.
Is that, Christian, is that something that you think you're just going to have to kind of manage as long as you've got Max in the car, that you're going to have almost, I guess, to put an arm around the teammate and be like, look, you know, you go out and do the job, but there's probably a good chance that, I mean, we've seen it now with definitely three teammates, but you could argue that final season 2018, you could start to see it with Daniel and Max was kind of forming that way anyway. Yeah. Is it just something, you know, you're going to have to manage going forward, whoever it is in that seat with Max, because it, as great as his opportunity is to drive at Red Bull, also seems like a bit of a poison chalice to be the guy in the same car as him, because that comparison can just be so brutal sometimes.
Well, it's a very, very tough seat, and I think you've almost got to switch off to what he's doing and just drive to the best of your ability and see where it takes you. So yeah, being Max's teammate is never going to be an easy gig, and you know, I think Checo's actually done you know, very well the last 2.5 years to achieve and do what he's done, and that takes great mental resilience, because not only has he got the data that he's staring down in the barrels, he's got you guys to deal with that are giving him grief every weekend saying, you know, why aren't you at your teammates level? Well, nobody's at his teammates level. He's still second in the world championship, 40 points ahead of, you know, third place. So, you know, having won two Grand Prix and finished second in at least another four of them. So he and his turn has had a decent season, but anything compared to Max is secondary.
It's almost like comparing apples to oranges a little bit there. And I imagine for Checo going into summer break after finishing P2 this weekend has to be a great boost for him mentally. It's been somewhat of a roller coaster as of late, especially on Saturdays and qualifying. Just where would you say that he is right now mentally?
I think, you know, he should have taken a bit of confidence out of, I thought his drive in Budapest was very strong on the Sunday. You know, he raced very hard there. He got unlucky in a sprint race on Saturday with the damage that he got. But then again, you know, his race on Sunday, he took the lead. He passed Leclerc around the outside of the top of the hill and led for the first 17 laps of the Grand Prix. So, you know, finished second place. So he can take a lot of positives. There's a few things that obviously he's focused on addressing in the second half of the year on Saturdays. But yeah, hopefully he'll get a bit of downtime, a bit of time to chill out. And I think he'll come back, you know, fully motivated for the second half of the year.
Will you set him any targets for the second half of the year? I mean, is it enough just to make sure he secures that second place in the championship, even if it's with a big gap to Max?
I think he'll want to win a race or two, but in the second half of the year, for sure, that'll be his target. I'm sure he'd love to win the Mexican Grand Prix. Yeah, you know, he will definitely want to be, you know, at least second in the world championship, that's for sure.
You welcomed Daniel back to the team at the start of the year, but he obviously got the AlphaTauri seat two races ago. I know that was kind of framed as in some areas as, you know, is Ricciardo going to take Checo's seat? But I think you've been pretty clear on the fact that if Ricciardo is going for anything, it's for 2025, and even then, you know, Perez is still in the hunt there. But just in terms of what Ricciardo's brought back to Red Bull generally since he's got back, what was it like having him back, and what do you make of the first two performances at AlphaTauri so far?
Well, look, first of all, it's been great to have him back and around. Daniel, the last couple of years, didn't really recognize the same character that was with us, you know, for all those years. And so in bringing him back into the Red Bull fold, you know, we had to build him back up and unpick a few bad habits that he got into. And, you know, we saw gradually in the virtual world, his performance getting better and better and stronger to be matching that of the race drivers. And then, of course, he did an amazing test at Silverstone, where he was truly impressive, and he knew there was a lot riding on that test. And then it became a logical choice for him to step into the AlphaTauri. And I thought that his first race in Budapest in a car that he'd never sat in before, you know, that last stint was very impressive, was very strong. He drove a decent race in the sprint race on the Saturday. And then on Sunday, you know, I haven't caught up with what his issues were, but there's obviously something wasn't quite right in the race because he wasn't able to show the form that he'd shown previously. And in turn, you know, Yuki had a very strong race. So, I think he takes, it looks like he's enjoying life again. He's enjoying driving again. And it'll be fascinating to see how he does in the second half of the season.
It's one of the fascinating kind of what might have been stories, isn't it, in F1, that 2018 decision to leave. I mean, have you guys ever spoken about that and said, like, hey, you know, what things might have been like had things gone differently? Or is it just kind of something, you know, maybe you don't talk about, or maybe, you know, neither of you wants to bring up?
Occasionally we've spoken about it, even when he wasn't with us. Yeah, look, I mean, you can't turn back the clock. You know, in life, sometimes you make decisions that you know, a few years later, you perhaps, you know, wish you'd taken another path. But, you know, the most important thing is he's got himself back into a situation where he's back within the Red Bull family. He's in a race car, and he's enjoying his driving again.
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Can you just describe for us, in particular me, what it's like working with Helmut Marko?
Yeah, look, I've known Helmut a long time. When I first met him in 1996, when I needed to buy a trailer for the Formula 3000 or Formula 2 team that I had. And Helmut's, you know, first of all, he's a passionate racer. He was a good driver himself until his accident. Look, he's just very direct, and you know, as a junior driver, you know, he's picked some great ones, and you know, he's a tough operator with the junior drivers. But if they can't survive Helmut, they'll never survive Formula One. Look, he's 80 years young. He's still, you know, watching every Formula 3 session, every F2 session, every split time, and following the young talent, you know, religiously. And I've always had a very straightforward and good relationship with him.
I think straightforward is a pretty good word for Helmut. Do you ever do you wince sometimes when you see some of the quotes that are out there? Because he does kind of speak his mind at all points. Something he's done.
He's a communication manager's nightmare. You know, so when Helmut goes rogue, you know, then you guys only have to prod him and you'll get a headline. But he just calls it as he sees it. You know, he just you know, he just will tell you exactly what he, you know, what he thinks, which in many respects is very similar to how Niki Lauda was. You know, they're same generation, same same makeup in many ways. Yeah, look, he's there's a great respect for Helmut and what he's, you know, what he's done and contributed over the years. And yeah, he's still he, at 80 years of age, he's still, you know, he's still looking for purple sectors.
What happens to the Red Bull Young Driver Program now? Because obviously Checo came in at Red Bull from outside. Daniel Ricciardo's come back. Yep. Yuki is really more aligned with Honda, I suppose, than Red Bull. So what's happening with the pipeline there? Is it providing the drivers that you want? Does there need to be a rethink around it?
I think that, look, I mean, things go in waves. It's produced Sebastian Vettel. It's produced Max Verstappen. You know, Daniel is a graduate of it. Carlos Sainz is a graduate of it. It's given, you know, Pierre Gasly is a graduate of it. There's so many drivers it's given opportunity to and got to Formula One, Alex Albon being another. It's focusing a bit more on youth, I think, going forward as well. We had a lot of drivers in Formula 2 this year. I think that will be thinned out moving forward, and perhaps a refocus on perhaps some of the lower Formulae as well. But you know, there's a Max Verstappen or a Sebastian Vettel. They don't come along every season, so it's just making sure that you identify that talent when it does come along.
I'm also looking forward to the future 2026 regulations. You've had your say on them a number of times in the press recently. There was an F1 commission meeting recently. There was talk that there'd be an improvement in energy management. Can you tell us if it's going in the right direction? Are you more confident about where it's going now after that meeting?
I think things are moving in the right direction. I think some of the stuff that the FIA have been looking at, they seem to be, you know, moving very much in, I would say, hopefully in a route that is going to produce competitive racing in 2026. So, I think it's an important one that we need to get right and work collectively. And that's where sometimes I think self-interest needs to be left behind for the benefit of the sport. And I think that, you know, things are definitely moving in the right direction now for 2026.
What were some of your initial concerns?
The engine that had been effectively, anything that ends up as a compromise usually is, and that there was too much inference being placed on the chassis to make up for some of the inadequacies in the engine. But I think that's been refined and sorted out in what's been proposed for 2026 now. So it's great that you know, in enough time that's been addressed.
When those Netflix cameras aren't there, Christian, what are those meetings like? Are they all quite as spicy as what we saw with you and Toto, or did those cameras kind of ramp up the showmanship of everybody? Because there must be so much to discuss in those situations, and you've got so many personalities in there. It's easy to imagine that it follows maybe not quite the same interaction you and Toto had then. But
I mean, I don't turn this sort of car out every full-on commission meeting. And
but that's what I was imagining you were saying to him last week.
No, not at all. They get a bit sporty at times, but you know, there needs to be a healthy debate in Formula One, and I think by and large they're usually pretty constructive.
Outside of the two of you, who seems to be one of the more outspoken and fiery team principals?
Franz Tost.
I mean, you know, just surprised by that?
You know when you've been toasted.
He doesn't. You wouldn't maybe think that from speaking to him, but I guess that's kind of what makes it so would be surprising, huh?
Yeah, but the thing is, when I look around the room now, they're very different personalities. When I first came into the sport, there was Ron Dennis, there was Flavio Briatore, there was Eddie Jordan, there was Jean Todt, there was Bernie Eccleston running it, there was Max Mosley there, Frank Williams, you know, some really big characters and personalities. And of course, now you look around the room, and maybe it's me just getting older, but you know, there's more managers there than, and it's gone much more technical than the entrepreneurial side. So I suppose, you know, Toto and myself are perhaps two of the more of the dinosaur type of characters, mm-hmm. compared to some of the, even though I'm still on the younger side, you know, of the team principles. But the dynamic and the definition of what a team principle is these days is very different to when I first came into the sport.
How so?
As I say, because those characters are just very different. I think that many of them are now sort of morphing from technical backgrounds where they're very focused just on the technical and perhaps sporting regulations, rather than actually thinking about the business and the bigger picture and the sport as a whole.
I think A Drive to Survive made in 2006, 2007 must have been, I think that would have been pretty entertaining. Who do you think would have been like the kind of Gunther Steiner style kind of cult hero if they'd done it 2 decades earlier?
I mean, they were all massive characters. I mean, Ron Dennis was a big character. He was passionate about what he would argue for. You know, Bernie would carve up the room. He'd have everything nailed up with Max before the meeting had even started. Flavio, you know, a huge character. You know, if Ron Dennis said it was black, he'd say it was white. Jean Todd would just be ruthless in his protection of Ferrari and all things Ferrari, totally uncompromising. And so, yeah, they were all, you know, huge characters and personalities.
What do you think is better for the sport? Because I remember Ben Eccleston used to come into the media center and just drop a bomb in there and, you know, it would all kick off. We didn't get that from F1 anymore. And like you say, the characters maybe aren't quite as big and bold as they once were. But is it better now because things are getting done? You know, I mean, Nate said Netflix. I don't know if it would have been allowed under Bernie's watch either to have Netflix.
But Bernie would have never dreamt of doing Netflix because, you know, he would have, the money involved would have been nowhere near what he would have expected. But, you know, when you look what Netflix have done for the sport, it's transformed the sport. It's taken it into households that it would have never been in previously, of being a niche sport. It's now made drivers and some team principals household names, and you know it's engaged America. We now have 3 US races. You know, the biggest market in the world. We're now flourishing in, and it's brought you know, millions and millions of dollars of revenue into the sport, of sponsorship and advertising revenues and so on. So you know, it has been a game changer. But part of that changing has also been the way that it's been perceived, because obviously, you know, Formula One as a sport, you've got your original and your diehard fans that follow, you know, all the action. And then Netflix sort of turned it on to the Kardashians on wheels. So it brought a whole new audience, a young audience, a female audience, and it changed the dynamic massively. Massively compared to you know, where the sport was. You know, 10 years ago, arriving at the hotel in Budapest, you've been lucky you found, you know, 25 people out there. Now we have to go through the underground car park and go through kitchens because you can't get in the hotel.
Yeah, last year I got stuck outside. I think it was McLaren, and you were, maybe it was a few other teams, and you couldn't actually drive down the road. There were so many fans just in the streets out there. It was mad. Just on that, and Bernie not letting the Netflix cameras in, I don't know if you ever saw the Stallone movie that he originally wanted to make.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, which is dreadful. But obviously now Formula One has opened up its doors to Hollywood. What do you, they've obviously been filming recently. What are you expecting from that? And it must just be such a cool project that, you know, to be involved with and to be see happening around you in the paddock.
Well, hopefully it'll be better than the Stallone movie.
I don't think that's too difficult to do, actually. That's pretty bad.
You know, if they're flicking coins and driving over them, you know, we'll know we're in trouble. But look, it's great that, again, it's taking Formula One to the big screens. With Toto and Lewis as executive producers, I'm sure we're going to be portrayed as the bad guys and the villains. But look, I think it's great for the sport. It's great for Formula One, and the interest in sport is just amazing.
You mentioned the growth here in the United States. I always feel like Americans are a little late to the party, and I'm glad that we finally got there. But the fact that we're going out to Las Vegas at the end of the year, what are your expectations for that race?
That race is going to be insane. I've never known so much hype around a sporting event as a race on Saturday night down the strip in Las Vegas. Everybody I meet says, oh, I want to be in Vegas. That weekend will be insane. Look, I think it's the whole world's going to be watching, and hopefully we can put on a great show. Hopefully the track will deliver, you know, a great race. And to be racing there under the lights is going to be unique.
And the prospect of racing in Vegas, even 5 years ago, it would have seemed absolutely bonkers. It speaks, doesn't it, so much to where F1 is that they can put on an event that it just, by every other metric, it just doesn't seem like it's something F1, you know, should be putting on or should be able to put on. But just where it is right now in America, is that a fair assessment, do you think? If this had been 10 years ago, do you think we'd have got close to that kind of situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's unimaginable. We were struggling. If you remember Austin a few years ago, we're having to get Taylor Swift there to get a crowd there. Now she's lucky if she's allowed in. So if she can get a pass. So, you know, it's changed so much. And I think, you know, Las Vegas, I think we'll just take it to another level. It's unprecedented, the interest that we've had in that race and the hype. And so it's just very nice of Stefano to put a race on for my 50th birthday on that weekend.
Do you ever worry about too much growth too quickly, or this is what it is and you just have to roll with it as it goes?
It's an element of both. You've got to roll with it. You've got to embrace it. You've got to make sure that the sport keeps moving. We can't stagnate. Otherwise, you know, all this new fan base are kind of just lose interest. But and we can't abuse it either. And I think, you know, 24 races is, that's tough. You know, we shouldn't be going beyond that. That's for sure. And, you know, we should always be thinking of who are our fans, you know. And you know, Formula One, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. It's a sport, but it is, all sport is a form of entertainment. And you know, we can't abuse that.
And this is a thing that a few people brought up recently, Christian, is that because we've got this big new audience, we need to keep them entertained by having other people rival you. Now, I know it's not your fault that you're off there winning by such a margin, but does it become a problem for the sport, you know, if we do have one team, be it Red Bull or Mercedes, dominating the way we've had?
It's, you know, you remember the Schumacher years, the Mercedes years. You know, we've had a couple of years now, and we had 4 years, you know, as well a few years back. So, look, it will converge 100%. You know, the regulations are stable. The engines, there's not much between them. The chassis are the one things that the team can control. I fully expect things to converge by 2025. And then we'll rip it all up and start again in 2026.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We usually put drivers and team principals on the hot seat here to wrap up our Unlapped episode, okay? So we're going to rapid fire hit you with a bunch of different questions, okay. See which you land on. Which driver, other than Max or Checo, of course, would you want to grab a beer with, past or present?
Oh, past or present. Juan Manuel Fangio.
I think, that would be a pretty good one.
Sorry, we've got a few written here. I'm just trying to work out which one to ask.
You've had a lot of drivers to your house before, haven't you, for the British Grand Prix? What's your go-to? Do you have a go-to karaoke song or anything like that? What's your kind of your signature song?
I have a look. The singing is not really in my department, but Don McLean's American Pie's come out a few times. That's been a Mark Webber. Summer of 69 was pretty good. Daniel Ricciardo and his he's got some country and western song that I can't remember the one that he came out with now. But you know, we've had all four drivers at one point singing Spice Girls songs.
What is your favorite Spice Girls song? Do you have one? Are you allowed to have a favorite?
I just love all of them.
That's a coached answer. Smart, you can tell you've been asked that.
Smart answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a summer break, Christine. So have you got a favorite holiday destination? Is there somewhere that you go every summer?
Well, my favorite place is just being at home, to be honest with you, because we end up traveling, you know, so much during the year. Sometimes it's just nice to be at one place, you know, home. I've got a young family. It's great to spend a bit of time with them. We'll be getting the tents out and doing a bit of camping and just having a bit of fun. If England ever does get a summer, then we'll be fully embracing it.
What would your dream job be if it weren't an F1 team principal?
Well, crikey, my dream job, if I wasn't a team principal, I'd probably be unemployable. You know what? I love horses, so it'd be something to do with horses. I wouldn't be a jockey, that's for sure, but
you're a trainer.
Like a trainer.
You still have you have the horse. Is it called Bottas or Valtteri? I remember there was a joke about.
Okay, that's Netflix's fault once again.
Yeah. Well, let's clarify. So, what is the
wife? Horse? My wife made reference to that. We're talking about the personalities of the horses that we were riding.
Yeah, that's right.
She said, your horse is a little bit of a, you know, Valtteri. And I said, darling, you cannot say I'm riding boxes.
That's right. Sorry. That's me not remembering the episode properly. Yeah. But great TV. Great TV, though. In terms of the Formula One calendar, you mentioned how big that is. What's your favorite track that's not currently on there at the moment?
That's not on the calendar. Brands Hatch. Mm. You know, long circuit at Brands Hatch. I mean, where else have we been? I mean, Istanbul's a great circuit. You know, there's so many great circuits that we've raced at over the past. That unfortunately, there's only so many spots on the calendar.
Kristen, we've seen you with your barbecue. You had all the drivers round. I think was it just before Silverstone?
Yeah.
So what gets thrown on the barbecue? What's your special dish that you serve up from?
It's just a typical sort of man barbecue of steak and sausages and burgers, and everything's obviously slightly overcooked. It's all pretty wholesome stuff.
I think Zach Brown in jest said that he wanted to fight Toto Wolff out in Las Vegas. Who would you put your money behind to win a boxing match between those two?
The two of those guys?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Zach can be pretty punchy. I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to be a close one to call that, I think.
What about if it was you and Toto or you and Zach, would you fancy yourself in the ring, or is it something you want
part? You know, I would not like to be anywhere near the ring with either of the two of them. So, I'm not a fighting guy.
He's a lover, not a fighter, guys. Okay.
Yeah, I'll let you say that.
Yeah.
That's going to be the headline of the podcast now, Christian. You've done it.
Exactly. Because Paul Smith was so kind to make this happen, I have to personally ask. He went viral at Monaco for saying, I'm going to get in f***ing shit, dude. Did he get in f***ing shit, Christian, or was he okay?
He was doing his job. I didn't condone the language, but I did support the behavior where he was protecting the car from overzealous TV crews that could have stood on a front wing at any point and completely ruined our Monaco Grand Prix. So, yes. Don't condone the language, but did absolutely condone the spirit of him trying to protect his team's car.
Yeah.
Just on that question, actually, the grids recently have been absolutely insane. Have you noticed that? I mean, it seems like it's double the people every race now that we have.
Yeah, you can't move. I mean, half the people, you don't know who the hell they are, but it's something that has been discussed and has been raised, I think, you know, again, in the Formula One World Council and Commission, just to say, from a safety point of view, I mean, these cars, you know, things can go wrong with them. I mean, God forbid there was never an issue with, you know, so many people on the grid. So I think that, but it's the popularity of Formula One. I mean, will we even be able to get on the grid in Las Vegas? I mean, it's it's that race in particular is going to be crazy.
Before we say our goodbyes, and this has been so fascinating and lovely, we appreciate your time. Anything you'd like to say to Red Bull faithful before you go?
Well, look, I mean, we're just tremendously grateful for all the support that we get all around the world. And yeah, look, I mean, just a big thank you for you know, all the well wishing that we get. Red Bull's a different team. We play our music loud and we enjoy what we do, and we try and do it with a smile on our face. So yeah, thank you. Just a big thank you.
I had one final question.
Yeah.
Sorry, Katie. I had one final question to finish with. There's an impressive helmet collection there behind you. Yeah. What are some of the helmets you've got? Because one that looks like a Vettel helmet, but I can't quite work out.
There's Max and Alex Albon. There's Checo on the top there. Who else? Pierre Gasly, Sebastian Vettel.
Are those yours, Christian?
Daniel Ricciardo. The more classic, the red and white ones, you know, the old-fashioned ones, that's mine.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously yours are their pride of place.
Inspired by Riccardo Patrese.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. What do the other guys have to do to get, like, a helmet makeup there? Do you just go and say, I want this in the office, or how does it end up behind you?
Well, look, you know, they're all very generous racing drivers, as you well know, so and a crash helmet is very personal to them. So, yeah, it's been very kind of them to donate crash helmets. They've obviously wanted something.
We'll leave it there.
Very good.
Many burning questions to follow up with. Christian,
thank you.
We
thank
appreciate
you very
the
much.
Time. Thank you.
Okay, nice to talk to you. All the best.